The facts about microphones in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the rain report for November 2nd. So what's your favorite microphone in your ham shack? You may think otherwise after you've heard the next three rain reports. The guy who may change your mind is Bob Heil, K9EID, the only microphone man in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, recently spoke with Bob Heil for more than an hour on Skype about Bob's preferred microphone and those microphones he absolutely despises. Here's our first excerpt from that interview.
You talked often about amateur radio in your life and how that got you to where you are. But how is it that you got into microphones?
Well, I was on the road for many years and doing all the rock and roll sound. We made quite a presence there. In fact, we did things that nobody had done in those days for the groups such as the Grateful Dead, the Who, Walsh, and all those guys in the 60s and 70s. And it ended us up as we're the only manufacturer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there for artists. And about 10 years ago, they said, we need to look at what the technology is behind making these people artists. And they came to me, and we were it because I still had some of my stuff, and we'd been doing things that nobody else had done. And the reason I could do them was amateur radio, being able to experiment and play with things. The other thing was very important. As a 15-year-old kid, I became the organist at the Fox Theater in St. Louis. What does that have to do with it? Everything, because that organ with about 4,000, 5,000 pipes in it from 1 inch to 32 foot, it hadn't been played in 20 years. My mentor, Stan Kahn, who was a regular organist there, needed somebody to help. That somebody was a 15-year-old kid, me. And we had to voice and tune the organ. Now, tuning is no big deal. That's just octaves. But where I really picked up an art was listening. And listening is not a very capable thing today. People just hear. Okay, there it is. They really don't get in and dissect what they hear. And harmonics are a big play in what we do with all kinds of audio. And that's what I brought to that industry. Well, when I came back into ham radio in 1980, I was so disgusted because all I heard when I did that was things like this.
Oh, how do I like my microphone? Or how do I like my new radio? What is it? It's a Kenwood. It's what's the make of it? MZ50 or matching? Really, there was no articulation. There was no presence. It was very difficult to copy everybody. Let me get it back up here. It had no articulation, and that's because just because it was painted the same color doesn't mean it matched the audio presence that we needed in amateur radio. So I built a little box, the EQ200, in 1982. It hit QST. It became the cover award for July of 1982, and I was very stunned because I never even knew about the cover award, but it showed you how to build an equalizer so that you could go in and instead of you sounding like this, you can go into your little box and you can do that and this, and all of a sudden you become very articulate. And that box was my beginning into the amateur radio market. We built thousands of them. And then I'm figuring, wait a minute. If we only have to do this and this, why don't we build a microphone that did this and this? And so I did. The HC5 element and the HC4 elements become very predominant in the amateur radio world because there were microphones that we didn't care how they matched in color. They were pretty, but they were super when it come to articulation. And over 100,000 microphones later, here we are. And I just looked at what we needed to do, because what we had were Shure 444s and old D104 high impedance things, and they really didn't cut it. And what the big problem was, and it just really disturbed me, a lot of people have a D104 and they have an amplifier in the bottom. No, they don't. That is not an amplifier. It is not. What is it, Heil? It is an impedance matching circuit active. It could have had a transformer, but they did it actively, because what was happening, the D104 was back in the 30s. It was made for high impedance, a million ohm inputs. Well, when you shove that into a CB radio, you just about shorted it out. And that's where it started. I mean, the CB craze is really what brought it back to life. They had put it to bed long before that. But then the hams got hip to it, because Astatic built this little board in the bottom of it, and now it was a low impedance microphone, and it worked pretty good. But it's really high-pitched and tinny. Hams were wanting better audio. The same thing with the 444. They wanted better audio, better articulation, but they wanted full range. That was one of the things that started happening when you started seeing rigs like the TS-870, the TS-850, some of the Yaesus and so on of the late 80s. And so that's why we started building microphones that were pretty much full range. However, I never, never built a microphone that didn't have a real nice rise in the mid-range. And where I learned all that was from Paul Klipsch. Paul Klipsch was the father of folded horn. He was the father of the hi-fi movement in the late 50s. And in 1972, Paul Klipsch called me on the phone and said, I want to come and see what you're doing, because I was building 15 and 20,000 watt PAs and nobody had done that. I didn't know that. I'm just a ham having fun with all of our artists and making good, loud sound. It wasn't just loud. It was good and loud. And so from Paul, I learned so much, and I only wished that in our amateur radio test, we would have quizzes about Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson. Back in the 30s, they worked for Bell Labs. When Bell Labs first turned the telephone on, it was awful. It was absolutely terrible. And they couldn't figure it out, because everything going in the input was coming across the country out to the telephone in California. It didn't sound the same. What happened? It was the same. It was our ears. And so Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson did this study, and I sure hope everybody will go and look at – it's easy today. Back in that day, we had to go to the library. Look up Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson, the Fletcher-Munson curve, and see what is going on. Listen to what our ears are not hearing. Our ears have tremendous holes in them. They're certainly not flat. But the other thing we learn is from 2,000 to 3,000 cycles, that's the most important, because that's where the articulation is. And I can show you that real easy. We're going to take that out of equation. There is no mid-range here. I just took it out. Sound like the low end came up, didn't it? That's what fools your ears. I didn't change the low end. I changed the mid-range. I took it out. We're going to put it back in, because you really, really need. Now I'll dial up at 2.5K. I have a parametric equalizer where I can change the activity of it and the frequency. Now, it's a lot easier to understand. There's no listener fatigue. I'm talking softer, and you can still hear it better because I have 2 to 3K emphasized. And all of my microphones have that. And it's one of the things that the broadcasters have loved about my microphones, that they don't have to equalize them a lot. They just plug them in.
You're listening to the thoughts and observations of a ham who has sold well over 100,000 microphones of his own design. We'll continue Hap Holly, KC9RP's conversation with Bob Heil, K9EID, after this break for station ID. This is the Rain Report.
You You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
What we really started working on was doing microphones that had very good speech articulation, because none of these others had it. Things like the SM58 of Shure, they're used by a lot of people. But what people don't understand is you got to have about $5,000 worth of processing to make them sound good in a television or live sound or whatever. You see them all the time, but you don't see what has to happen to make them sound good. But in live situations, I said, no, I want a microphone you can plug in, and you don't need a lot of equalization. And that's what's really built our whole history, really, from 1982. So we really brought a lot of that to amateur radio. And then in 2006, my best friend Joe Walsh, who, of course, is a ham, we've known each other since the James Gang and Barnstorm and all of that, he said, you need to build me a microphone for the stage. And he had my gold line, and he wanted me to put an XLR in the bottom of it. And I said, why? He said, because the SM58s, they don't sound good. They don't have good articulation. Well, what you are listening to right here is what we call the PR22. That is a gold line where I've increased the mids about 4 dB. This is flat. You're listening to it flat, and it's really, really a nice microphone. And I can't tell you how many hundreds of stages have this microphone on them today. We built another one, the PR35, that's the same mid-range, but I had another low-end characteristic that they all want the lower end. So that's what the PR35 is, and you see those so often today. There's where they all were born. But we looked at things like, I was very important that we built internal windscreens, because when Carrie Underwood goes out, or Paul Rogers, or Joe, or any of them, they don't want that screen, that foam, because it's not good out on the live stages, because it gets you in trouble. they break them, or they spit at them and all that. We have it on the inside of our microphones. Sometimes you'll get a voice that's very puffy, very airy, and that we have to use an external, but not too often. And so that's all things that we do to cause the pop to not happen, the P-pop, we call it. And I'm really popping it here, but you might hear just a little of it, but I'm really accentuating that. Normally, you don't, under normal circumstances, you don't hear that. You know, the microphone is nothing but a speaker turned backwards. Of course, a lot better quality of the diaphragm. And one of the things that I did, because of Joe, back in 2006, he said, you got to build me a better microphone, a bigger microphone. And so I did. Short tried it years ago, and they failed. They had a mic called the SM7. They had built all of the physics. They had all the case and the screens and all that ready to go. But they couldn't build a large diaphragm. They couldn't make it work. So they stuck an SM57 inside in a shock mount. You don't believe me? Open it up. What a farce. And it just isn't that great a microphone. But because of what it looks like, and looks, that doesn't make it. Well, in 2007, I came up with a large diaphragm to answer Joe's request. And the large diaphragm in the PR40 and the PR35 is about an inch and a half. Unbelievable, because here I'll switch to it. Okay. It's such a rich, big sound. There is no processing. This, again, is straight through. The other thing that everybody likes about it, the broadcasters and the entertainers, I'm moving it. You can't watch it, but believe me, I'm 90 degrees off. The microphone is across the front of my face. I'm not talking into it like you should and like you have to on Shures and Elektra Voices and everybody else. I'm moving this microphone as I talk 180 degrees, and I'm absolutely positive you're not hearing any difference. How did I do that? We did it because of the large diaphragm, but we also did it as to how we mounted it. And then I had up at one time a 128-element antenna. Yes, 128 elements. It was a test I did for J-Beam Company back in 1960s. And I had it up for a long time, and several times Joe would come through in the bus, would get on 2 meters, and he'd say, "Hey, you got to build me a microphone. Works like that big antenna. When you turned it around, I didn't hear anything." So I did. And we are the only microphone on the planet. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what the name is. I don't care who it is. Nobody can do what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to turn this microphone backwards and talk in the back of it. And I know you're going to say, "Well, you just turned it off." No, I didn't. Because what I'll do is I'll tap on the front of it while I'm talking in the back. You'll hear me, but it's 40 dB down. Oh, what a wonderful specification, because we don't hear our blowers, we don't hear people's television in the other room, and in broadcast studios they don't have the reflection off the window. Here we go, I'm going to turn this backwards. I'm talking into the back of it. It was still on. I'll do it again. I'm into the front of it. Here, I'll just take it all around. I'm going to go all the way around it and go here, and it's at the same axis. In other words, it's at the same place, but it's 40 dB down. No other microphone will do that. And we have really caused sensations in the broadcast industry. Just recently, Sirius Radio, they took all their RE20s out. They had an order from us. They bought 250 PR40s to replace them in all their studios. And they came back here a few weeks back and bought 87 more. And it's all because of the way it operates, the way it works. It's a natural sound. They don't need processing. They don't need anything. They plug it in to the low impedance input and talk. And they get this 40 dB of rear. Well, in the ham radio world, this is amazing because you don't hear your blowers and all that kind of stuff with other microphones. Oh, my gracious. It really becomes quite an instrument, as Carrie Underwood talks about it. She uses the PR35, which is basically this in a hand mic, and she claims all the time, "It's my instrument." And she's right, because if it doesn't pick up her voice properly, forget it. But she's been using our microphone since the day she won American Idol.
And that concludes our first of three excerpts from a Skype interview with the man behind Heil Sound, Bob Heil, K9EID. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, will be back next time with our second excerpt from his Skype interview with Bob. By the way, the intro, break, and close were recorded using a Heil HM12 microphone. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2018 Rain. All rights are reserved. This hamcast updates Saturday morning on the rainreport.com and Saturday evenings on shortwave station WTWW from Lebanon, Tennessee on 5.085 MHz. Now for all you microphoniacs, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!